Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hello, hi, and welcome. I am your host, Emmigan Awardner, and in my nearly 20-year career as a beauty and health writer, I have interviewed a lot of people. Supermodels, entrepreneurs, authors, celebrities, and doctors. And many of these conversations had a real impact on me, and I'd come away feeling inspired, excited, informed, and really empowered. And at the back of my mind, I'd always think, I wish I could just publish the tape so people could really feel that conversation. Well, on this podcast, you get to feel the conversation. I talk with experts, guests, and a few friends who I hope will inspire, inform, and empower you, and maybe also challenge you, whether you're looking for self-help, self-improvement, beauty advice, health insights, business know-how, or just some good old-fashioned life advice and a bit of a laugh. It's all here. Welcome to the show. My guest on this episode of the podcast is Lex Gillies, aka Talented Lex, who is perhaps best known for being the UK's top blogger, skincare blogger, when it comes to the subject of treating sensitive and atypical skin, because she herself has rosacea. And on this podcast, you'll have heard me speak to a whole host of people within the beauty industry about skin types, skin concerns, active ingredients and topical products. But perhaps what we've never really delved into is what it's really like to manage a chronic skin condition such as rosacea and the impact it has on your confidence, your self-esteem, and how you present yourself to the world. Lex was so generous and so honest about how her rosacea has affected her confidence and self-esteem. And I think acknowledging this aspect of skin and skin issues is just as important as offering the solutions and resources to help manage them. So on Lex's blog, which is www.talentedlex.com, she shares so many resources, tips and incredible advice about how to identify, manage and live with rosacea. And I'll share those resources in the show notes, of course. And this is a body of work that she has built up over the last nearly 10 years in managing her own, learning what works for her, being able to signpost what might be good for you, what might not be good for you, whilst also acknowledging that everyone's skin condition is completely unique. So as she says on the show, nothing is hard and fast, nothing is definitely going to work necessarily, but at least you'll have the signpost to help you on your own journey of discovery of how to manage your own skin condition. In this episode, Lex and I discuss how to know you have rosacea and why it's actually a multi-layered and quite complex skin issue. Why learning to manage your rosacea is a process of trial and error and unique to each and every single person who has it. The idea of a cure-all magic bullet product is a myth, so if someone says they have one, don't believe them. Why it's so important to understand that someone dealing with rosacea isn't just dealing with the physical thing that you can see, there are also many other things going on. How Lex's rosacea made her participate less socially and professionally. Why she started her blog, Talented Lex, and why she wishes she'd had a resource like it when she was originally diagnosed 16 years ago. How becoming a trusted resource for all things rosacea is a responsibility she takes very, very seriously, and so much more. Like I said, Lex was so generous with her time. She was so honest, and she really does share such a useful and helpful insight into managing rosacea, living with rosacea, and the things that go hand in hand with having it. And I have to be honest, a lot of these things I hadn't really necessarily understood or considered. So I came out of the end of this conversation feeling very educated and informed and really pleased for having sat down with Lex, because she's so interesting. And you're here. She's an awesome woman. So I'm glad to have her on the show anyway. All the links to Lex, her blog, her social channels, everything will be in the show notes. But without any further ado, here she is making her debut on the show. It's Lex Gillies on The Emma Gunn Show. Welcome to the podcast, Lex Gillies. How are you?
I'm very well, thank you. How are you?
I'm good. It's so nice to see you. And it's so nice to know that we're going to have this conversation because you are a skin positivity campaigner and rosacea blogger. And you have rosacea. You have created some excellent resources about it. And in my confessional to you, I just said, even though I've been writing about beauty for nearly 20 years now, I have never done a deep dive into rosacea. I've never worked on a title where there's necessarily been that kind of investigative tack on particular skin issues. And in looking at your content and in speaking to you, it's so clear that actually, well, I'm going to ask you this question. Do you feel as though someone who has rosacea is almost forgotten by the skincare and beauty industry?
I do a little. I definitely felt like that when I was first diagnosed. I think back then I'd never even heard the word rosacea when my doctor said it to me. I had no idea what that meant for me. Until I was diagnosed, I didn't realise that other women in my family also have rosacea. It was only when I saw it in my own skin, saw my own triggers, and then looked around the rest of the women in my family, and I was like, ah, okay, yeah, all of us. And they didn't know either, because it wasn't spoken about enough, and I still think it isn't spoken about enough. I think, you know, it has got better. I've had rosacea for 16 years now, and I've been blogging about it for about 8 or 9, I think, and it has come on a long way in that time. I do think that there are more people talking about it, a lot more information out there, but nowhere near enough considering it's a condition that affects 1 in 10 people. I think it should be a lot more widely known. It should be kind of a word that a lot of people hear and something that people are used to seeing.
So tell me about that then. You said about you noticed it in your family as well once you got diagnosed. Before you had a diagnosis, before you knew you had this thing called rosacea, how were you describing your skin? What was your skin, both yours and your family's, that you were managing?
I think we all used to describe our skin as sensitive in general. My dad has psoriasis, so, you know, he'll put something on his skin and his skin will flare up really badly. My sisters and my mum, we all are very rosy cheeked. You know, if we have a glass of wine or if we go out in the cold or the hot, we'll go very red. And I think we just thought that was just our skin type, that we were all very fair. We all thought that we just caught the sun easily and, you know, just went pink very quickly. And certain things would make us feel warm and a little bit prickly and itchy and things like that. But I think we just thought sensitive skin as a kind of blanket term. And then it was only when I went away to university and I think just a huge clashing of lots of different things. So lots of alcohol, late nights, terrible food, stress, just all these things at once, I think just sent my skin over the edge. And that's when it turned into something that I couldn't really ignore anymore. Before, I just used to be, oh yeah, I'm really hot. I'd be in the pub and I'd be like, I'm gonna have to go stand outside, I'm far too hot. And then it suddenly became something that wouldn't go down after a long time. So my skin would turn almost purple. It would look kind of mottled, almost like a bruise. And it wouldn't go down for hours and hours and hours. And I just thought, you know, this can't be normal. There must be something underlying, there must be, you know, it must be a rash, it must be an allergy, it must be something that can be dealt with. And then I went to my university GP, and the moment I walked through the door, they were just like, well, it's obviously rosacea. I was just bamboozled. I had no idea what they were talking about. But he knew from the instant, from looking at me, the pattern of the redness on my face. That's where it all started. And I've spoken before about, you know, I felt very let down by that GP because they basically said, here's a cream, come back in a couple of weeks. And the cream made things worse. And that was kind of him, you know, wiping his hands of me. He just wasn't that interested. He never mentioned anything about if I could find my triggers, or, you know, lifestyle changes, anything that I could do to make my life a bit more bearable. He just kind of dismissed me and made me feel a little bit like I was wasting his time for going in over something so frivolous, which I hear from a lot of people, I think, not just with rosacea, but a lot of skin conditions. I think people do feel that it's a vanity issue and that we're overreacting and that it's not so bad. And I think especially with things like rosacea, where it's not so much even just about the physical symptoms, but it's about how it makes you feel and about the way that it impacts your self-esteem. And I, that's something that I, over the years, have really pivoted the stuff that I talk about on my blog and on my social media, because, you know, you can go to your GP and your dermatologist to get advice about your skin, you know, your skincare and things like that. But the thing that I find more and more people coming to me about is how they deal with it day to day, how they talk to their family about it, how they get the courage to go on a date, how they, you know, how they wake up every day and go about their day to day life when they're thinking about their skin 24 hours a day. And, you know, it's, I listened to a podcast with you a couple of years ago, the Outspoken Beauty podcast, and it was the episode on puberty. And you spoke so movingly in it, and you were getting choked up as you were talking about, you know, the impact that it has on you and your self-esteem, and, you know, the issues you had with PCOS and the cystic acne that you had. And, you know, your feeling of walking down the street and not wanting to make eye contact with anyone, and walking into a room and assessing everybody in the room. And, you know, it's just, I think unless you've had a skin condition or something that is kind of a visible difference, I don't think you can understand the impact that it has on everything you do, every kind of place you go, everyone you meet, every thought you have in the day. There's just this constantly, just this constant thing in the back of your head saying, is your skin okay? How's your skin doing? What are they thinking? How are they responding to you? And it's exhausting. It's so tiring to have that constant, you know, tape running in the back of your mind, worrying and thinking about it. So I think that's kind of what I try to talk about on my blog a lot, which is, you know, how do you deal with that? How do you reconcile trying to get on with your life and lower the stress that can make your skin worse, while also trying to deal with the fact that you live with a chronic skin condition that makes you stressed?
Yeah,
it's a hard thing to balance.
It's a really hard thing to balance. And I think what you said there is so true about, and you mentioned it. So let's talk about my acne, in the sense of it was the obstacle. It was the thing I knew I was wearing. And I don't know if this is a similar thing that followers articulate to you when they get in touch, but it's that horrible feeling. And I've just read a book actually about the inner child and the wounds that your inner child can carry. And one of them is feeling that you're not seen. And obviously another is feeling that you're not heard. And I feel as though when you have something like acne or rosacea, basically a physical thing that people see, it's that feeling that people are seeing that and not you.
Yeah, definitely. And I think it's the concern that it's what that thing is saying about you before you can even say anything yourself.
Yeah.
And that's something that I've really struggled with for a long time, because there are so many misconceptions about rosacea and so many misconceptions about people who present with skin that looks a lot like rosacea. You know, people assume that you're drunk, people assume that you're sunburned, and, you know, it's just all of these things that, you know, I've had people accuse me in the past of having a crush on my boss because I went really red every time he came to talk to me, when actually it was just that I was stressed and it was my first job. And, you know, when the boss comes over and directly wants to talk to you, you instantly think, oh my God, I'm getting fired. So I would instantly go bright red, and my colleagues pointed out in front of him, oh, look, she goes red every time you talk to her, she must fancy you. And it's just, you know, that kind of thing. That's no longer vanity. That's something that actively is interfering in my career and my day-to-day life. And, you know, it feels very unfair that something that is completely outside of my control can cause someone to make such huge assumptions about me that can impact my day-to-day life.
Yeah. That's okay. So let's go back to the beginning. What is what is rosacea? Because I had a dermatologist on the podcast last year, and actually it was around, I would say, 2 to 3 months into lockdown. And she was saying that lots of people were spending a lot more time looking at themselves, both in the mirror and via video calls as we're doing now. And they were looking at their skin, and there was this real confusion between people suddenly thinking, oh, I have acne, but actually they had rosacea, or vice versa. So it does seem to be that it is one of those things where there's a lot of confusion.
Definitely. And yeah, there's so many areas where things can overlap. And I think that's why I always say to people, you really should, your first port of call should be your doctor or your dermatologist, because it can be, you know, for a long time, I saw pimples on my cheeks that I now know was rosacea type 2. But back in the day, with the limited amount of beauty knowledge that I had, I saw pimples. I was like, okay, acne, I'll go out and buy, you know, a very astringent acne, you know, focused toner, and, you know, all sorts of things that are absolutely terrible. Looking back now, I cringe because they were the worst possible things I could have done for my rosacea. So it's an inflammatory skin condition, and there are different types. So now I have rosacea type 1, which is the flushing, visible, broken veins, can sometimes swell if my face gets really flared up. Rosacea type 2 is the pustules, so that's where people often get confused, and some people call it acne rosacea as well, which muddies the waters even more. And then there's ocular rosacea, which affects the eyes, and rhinophyma, which is where the skin on the nose thickens, which is quite rare. And then there's a final type, which is very, very, very rare, which is neurogenic rosacea, which is super rare, but it causes intense pain on the face. So yeah, there are lots of types. And it is important that you get diagnosed by a professional, because, as I said, if you're thinking it's one thing and it's potentially another, then that would change the way that you treat your skin. But it's chronic, so there is currently not a cure, but it can be managed. I would say I have mine managed pretty well. I know what most of my triggers are, so I either avoid them or work around them. So I often say to people that I treat my triggers a little bit like a hangover. So sometimes I've had a really, really bad week, and I'll just think, like, sod it. I need cheese, I need wine, I need all these things. And, you know, sometimes I'll think, I really want those things, but is the flare-up worth it on the other side? And every person is so different. I get so many people coming to me and saying, tell me exactly what you changed. Tell me what your exact skincare routine is, and I will do it. I will change everything. I will do whatever you tell me to do. And I have to tell them that that will not help, because every single person is very individual. I can tell them what the common triggers are, what's a good place to start with removing things and changing things. But realistically, you have to just put the work in yourself, which is, it's a lot of trial and error. It took me quite a long time to find out all my triggers and everything. But once you know them, it actually puts you back in control, because you are the one deciding, yes, I will have a glass of wine and sod the consequences, or no, actually, I've got a really big day tomorrow, and having that glass of wine now might feel good, but the flare-up tomorrow will make you feel worse, and that's not what I need. So every person has a different balance, and every person needs to find where that balance tips for them. But I just try and give as much information as humanly possible, so that people can see what's worked for me and they can use that as like a jumping point.
Oh, we lost you just for a tiny second there. A jumping point.
Yeah, just a jumping off point, so they know where to start and do further research.
Do you think, I mean, we're probably fast forwarding because there's a lot more to unpack there, but have you got to a place with your rosacea, because I think you said now 16 years diagnosed, have you come to a place with it where you've been able to see it as potentially a good thing, meaning actually I have a visible early warning system that tells me when I'm inflamed, that I now can control, and therefore it's not just impacting my skin, but it might be impacting my overall health, which is a positive, or no?
Yeah, I think over time I have tried to see it as a kind of silver lining, that it is basically just, you know, for a long time I saw it as me against my skin, and that my skin was my enemy that I was trying to defeat, and that, you know, it was doing these things on purpose and that I had to somehow kind of wrangle it into submission. But I think over time I've learned that it's not, it's the opposite of that. It's my skin desperately kind of waving a red flag and saying, oh my God, what are you doing? Stop it. Put down the tea tree oil for the love of God. And it wants me to heal it. It wants me to know what I'm doing wrong. It wants us to work together. I do think that it can be seen as a bit of a positive, that it's my body's way of telling me exactly, you know, pretty much instantly what's wrong and what I can do and how to change things.
Yeah. Okay. So let's go back, because that is fast forwarding, because I'm guessing it must have been quite the journey to basically know your triggers, identify your triggers. And as you said, talk about the impact it had on you and how it did it. Was it something that had always been present, and it got very much worse? And at the time when it got worse and you went to your GP, was that when it started to eat away or break down your self-esteem, essentially? Was that when you felt like it wasn't just affecting your skin, it was affecting your mind and your emotions?
Yeah, I think up until the point where I was at university, I didn't really think about my appearance all that much, to be perfectly honest. I was very lucky. Over like puberty and things, I didn't really get spots. I didn't have that many issues. I didn't really do any kind of skincare or anything like that. So it wasn't something that I really was aware of. And then when I went away to university, that was when it really started to change things, because, you know, I went to quite a small school. I grew up in rural town in Yorkshire, and I knew everybody who was at my school. Everyone knew everyone. And then I went away to Sheffield to go to university, and I suddenly thought, you know, this is my moment to shine. I can be whoever I want to be. And that was the exact moment that my skin was just like, no. So I just, you know, at the time when I should have been putting myself out there and making friends, I desperately just wanted to hide, and I didn't want to speak up in lectures. I didn't want to, you know, go up and start talking to people on my course or anything, because I just felt so embarrassed. And I knew that the moment I went and did something that was outside of my comfort zone, my skin would get even worse. So then it would just be like glowing bright red. And so that was when it started to just eat away and eat away and eat away. And I didn't even really think about it at the time. You know, I often get asked for kind of photos of my skin when it was at its worst, and there just aren't really that many out there, because, you know, this was back in the day when your nights out would be put on Facebook, and there would be like 100, it would be like, you've been tagged in 100 photos on Facebook, and it would just be like, oh, so I would just spend ages untagging, yeah, untagging, and or I would be the person that took the camera on the night out so that I could be the person taking the photos. And that's really sad that I have, you know, a big chunk of time at university where I don't have that many photos of me, or the ones that I do have are ones that I've very carefully selected to be allowed to be seen by the general public. So it does make me sad looking back and thinking about that. And I didn't really realize how much of an impact it had until, you know, many years later, when I spoke to my parents, and they both said, you know, you were such an outgoing child. You were the dancer. You were always putting on plays. You were like, you know, I was in a band at school. I was always the first person to stand up and be like the center of attention. And I cannot think of anything worse now. The thought of that just makes me feel sick. For something like that to have had such a profound impact on your personality is really sad. And it's something that, like I said, I didn't even realize that it had affected me in such a huge way. And this isn't something that I've actually spoken about on my blog or my social media or anything like that before. I've only really spoken to about my to my family and close friends, but just before the pandemic, I started seeing a therapist. And I was diagnosed with body dysmorphic disorder, and related kind of skin picking issues around that as well.
I'm so sorry, Lex. Every now and again, you're just going a little bit metally, and you went very messily on the diagnosis. Would you mind just repeating that for listeners?
Yeah, that's fine. So body dysmorphic disorder and related skin picking issues as well. And unfortunately, you know, I started seeing this therapist just before the first lockdown, and then I was actually ghosted by my therapist when lockdown started, which I feel like is something that a future therapist is going to have to unpick and do. So I felt we'd only really just started to kind of delve into everything. But so much of the stuff that came up, just everything just goes back to that. And so many things that I just kind of had convinced myself were normal thoughts or normal behaviours or things that everybody did or thought, all stem back to then and when I was first diagnosed, and how alone I felt for those first couple of years before I tried to take control myself, really, do my own research, find people online that understood and learn everything I could myself rather than trying to rely on doctors. I think it's something that's really difficult, because obviously I talk a lot about skin positivity and I talk about rosacea and how, you know, it doesn't define you and all these things, and those are things that I very strongly believe in, and I you know, they're the things that I talk about every day. But I also think that we can't ignore the very real impact of these kind of conditions and the way that they can have an impact on people, especially when, you know, the direct result of us being told, oh, it's not that bad, people have got it worse, don't worry about it, just slap some makeup on, no one will know. I think constantly being told that kind of thing or being fed that kind of idea is so much more damaging, because, you know, I could have dealt with all this years ago and maybe it wouldn't have been as bad, but I internalized those feelings for such a long time. And so, you know, I am trying to unpack them now, and hopefully the content that I share and the work that I do now helps people realize that before they get to this point, and that they understand that there are other people out there who know how they're feeling, that they are not alone, that they're not weird, that they're not vain, that all of these are very real things that they should be allowed to talk about and should get help with.
It's so interesting what you say about your personality changed. I just did a podcast with Gemma Oten from Seed, which is the one of the eating disorder charities. And I the way that you said it just made me think about something I said to her, which was I think about my childhood in before fat and after fat. And the fact that what I understood as a child who put on weight at the age of 8 went from being sort of quite doll-like to being an overweight child was the world treats you differently based on how you look. And that's a really rough pill to swallow as a child or any age, of course. And do you feel a little bit like before rosacea diagnosis, after rosacea diagnosis?
I do. I feel envious of pre-rosacea Lex, that she didn't really think all too much about what people thought about her. She was kind of, she was confident. She, you know, she was very happy. In fact, she thrived on standing out. I was a bit of an emo kid. I, you know, used to make like stencil my own t-shirts before it's out. I used to wear like yellow fishnet tights. And, you know, I was desperate to do anything to stand out. I think because I went to such a small school and I wanted to be, you know, a little bit different. And, you know, that to go from that to being like, look at me, look at me, look at me, to all of a sudden being like trying my best to be a wallflower is huge. And it does kind of make me wonder, you know, what if I would be different, if, you know, my life would have been different. Obviously, you know, I love my life, but it's, you know, who would I have been and what opportunities would I have had if I'd spoken up in lectures? Would I have engaged a bit more? Would I have done better at university? Would I, if I had put myself forward for more opportunities at work, I never wanted to be the person that, you know, presented stuff or asked a question in a meeting. And I used to hear from people that I worked with when I had like a proper office job, you know, they would say, you're so passive. You do your work, but you're not engaging. You're not kind of driving anything forward. You're not asking questions. You're not, you know, questioning people. And it wasn't, you know, in my head, I was there screaming like, what about this? Or this would be really good. Or why don't we do this? And then, you know, I didn't, the idea of me speaking up at a meeting and all of the heads swiveling to look at me would just break me out in a cold sweat. So I would just sit there. And, you know, it's so much more than just blushing. It's so much more than just a little bit of redness. And I think that's kind of the biggest thing that I try and tell people and try and share with people, that, you know, even if people have heard of rosacea, they very much just see it as like, oh, it's a bit of blushing. Oh, it's quite cute, isn't it? Oh, you never have to wear blusher.
Please tell me no one said that to you, Max.
Oh, I've heard it so many times. And it's just, you know, it's a lack of understanding about what it actually is and how it feels and how it affects you. And, you know, that's partly, I say to people that my blog and my social media, it's kind of, I see it partly as teaching people who have rosacea about it and helping them on their journey and helping them to feel supported. But I also see my job to be educating people who don't have rosacea so that they don't make stupid comments to someone at work, or they don't make a joke about somebody, because, you know, I can do the most amount of work within the rosacea community to help build people up, make them feel positive about the way they look, you know, get them to a great point. But the moment they go out into the real world and there's some idiot at work who makes a joke about them being a lush, that just goes instantly, no matter how much confidence you build up in a person. You know, it just takes one comment from somebody who thinks they're being hilarious and it can all go. So, you know, it is about educating people in a wider sense. And I think that's kind of what I hope the skin positivity movement as a whole can move towards, because, you know, from the skin positivity movement, we're seeing more brands kind of including people who have visible differences in campaigns. So, like, you know, it's still pretty tokenistic. So there'll be like 9 women with absolutely, you know, flawless complexions, and then they'll have one on the end who's got like a spot on her jaw, and it's like, oh, groundbreaking, we're so diverse. But at the same time, I joke, and it does feel a little bit kind of, you know, ticking a box at the moment, but at the same time, it's quite revolutionary. You know, for so many years, all we've seen in the media is this like 8-foot skinny blonde woman with massive boobs, perfect skin. And we've been told this is what everyone should be aiming for. This is the pinnacle. This is the absolute best you can possibly achieve. And everyone that falls below that is failing, and you're not trying hard enough. But luckily we're here and we have the products and the diet and the clothes and the hair dye and everything that will help you reach that point. And I just think so many people are now waking up and realizing that actually what we've been fed as the goal is, you know, if you think about the amount of people who would look at a picture like that and think, I'm so happy to see myself represented in this magazine. It's such a tiny minority of people that look like that. The majority of the people looking at it are the people that would actually probably prefer to see, I don't know, pores, a couple of hairs here and there, like some scars, like just skin that looks like skin. Because I think, like, now when I look at adverts, I'm so kind of in it that I don't see it as something that is speaking to me anymore. I just think like they're targeting this at teenagers, obviously, because, you know, no one looks like that. Nobody over the age of 14 has skin like that. And it does the opposite. It puts me off completely. Whereas if I see a brand who is saying, you know, here are some people who love our product, and some of them, you know, have fine lines, and some of them have, like, you know, acne scarring from when they were a teenager or whatever, it's just, it feels so much more authentic to me. And I hope that that is kind of the way we're going. I hope that more brands actually, they move away from just seeing it as kind of a tick box, like, oh yeah, we've got our plus size person, we've got our person of color, we've got our person with a couple of spots. And actually they just start seeing like, oh, this model came in earlier and we really like her. Like, people responded to her really well last time. And it's not because she has spots. It's not because she has vitiligo. It's not because she has rosacea. It's because people like her, or they like the way she looks in that product or whatever. So I hope that that's where we're going. I think we're still quite a long way off. I think, you know, the body positivity community, the movement, have been fighting for this for decades, and they're still, you know, fighting that battle. So I don't see it happening anytime soon. But, you know, the online community that I'm a part of, I'm a proud part of the skin positivity community. It's such a lovely place to be. It's honestly such an empowering place. And I, whenever people come to me, I say, you know, even if you don't want to be on Instagram, just make an account, make a private account, and just follow. Like, I'll send you a list of, like, you know, 20, 25, 30 people that you should follow, who will just make you feel so, like, joyful when you see them, because they're not, it's not even like they're saying acne's the best. You know, I think some people think that skin positivity is a saying, like, don't try and change your skin condition, don't try and make it, you know, don't try and heal your skin. They think we're kind of glorifying or like promoting skin conditions, but it's just the idea that no matter what your skin looks like, it deserves to be loved, and you deserve to be loved. And if we all wait until to be happy, or to put ourselves out there, or do the things we always want to do, we'll never do them, because we'll never be happy. There'll be the next thing to fix, and then the next thing to fix. And I think, why can't people embrace their skin in the moment while still also working towards, you know, healing their skin in whatever way they want to? I think that there's a lot of confusion around what skin positivity is. And I think that if people look through some of the accounts and read the things that people are saying, I think they would understand a bit better that actually it's just about people saying, I just want to live my life, I just want to be a person in the world while I also have this particular skin condition. And for me, that's so much more important, especially for rosacea sufferers, because what we have is chronic. This is not going to go away. There isn't going to be a day where you say, oh, when my rosacea goes away, I'll finally, you know, go to work with no makeup, or I'll, you know, get married, or I'll go on that beach holiday, because you're waiting for a day that might not come. So you have to embrace where you are now, and you have to embrace what your skin is like, and kind of learn to work with it, and learn to be happy in the moment, because, you know, otherwise you're just going to be punishing yourself for the rest of your life.
Yeah. And it's so true what you say about brands, actually. Just suddenly, when you were talking then about how as a consumer, you could think that you're wrong because they aren't speaking to you, meaning that the person that they're using in their advertising campaigns and the images they project are not what you look like, therefore there must be something wrong with you, or it's not for you. And actually the tide is turning. It's like, if you're not talking to everyone, brands, then you're the one that's wrong, not the consumer who you have decided is invisible. And I guess that brings us onto a great word, actually, of invisibility. Of I follow a lot of body confidence accounts, and that word comes up a lot in, I used to be invisible. I used to just not be catered to. I'd walk into a shop and I was very much there, but none of the clothes on the rack would fit me. Nothing looked like me, or no one looked like me or catered for me. So do you feel as though there's more positive visibility, if we're going to use that term, in terms of understanding and catering towards skin conditions, particularly in the case of rosacea?
I do. I think more and more brands are kind of realizing, probably just from a, you know, from a financial point of view, that if 1 in 10 people have rosacea, it would probably serve them well to do a skincare routine that is appropriate for them, or makeup that's kind of appropriate for them. Because the amount of times I've been sent a skincare routine, they'll be like, oh, it's great for sensitive skin, or I'll hear, you know, it'll get sent to endless numbers of influencers, and an influencer who has, you know, inverted commas, normal skin will be like, oh, and you know, the PR thing says it's great for sensitive skin. It's like, what are you basing that on? How on earth would you know? And you know, it'll get sent to me and I'll look and it's full of fragrance, it's full of essential oils, it's full of all these things that I would just never put on my skin. And I just think, you know, there are terms like, you know, sensitive skin and things like that that just aren't protected. And when I didn't know anything about skincare when I was first diagnosed and things, I would have gone out and bought anything that said it was designed for sensitive skin without having any idea. And I think, you know, there is a responsibility that brands have out there to not only cater to all different kinds of skin conditions, especially very prevalent ones, but also they have a responsibility to be, I guess, just to be more responsible in the way that they're marketing things, to understand that, you know, there are people out there who are desperate, they're very vulnerable. There are people who come to me and they've spent a fortune on products because, you know, they'll see one person on the internet say, oh yeah, I have a bit of rosacea, when actually what they mean is my cheeks sometimes get red. So they'll say, oh, I have a bit of rosacea and this was fine for me. And it'll be some like intense glycolic peel that they're using like 5 times a week. And it's just like, no, oh my God. And it's just, you know, there's so much misinformation out there. And I think, you know, the internet is such a double-edged sword, because when I was first diagnosed back in the day, when all I could see were fields, you know, there wasn't much of the internet. Facebook had literally just arrived and it was still, you know, just people who you actually knew. Yeah. And, you know, I went on the internet and found some like American forums, and that's where I first discovered people talking about triggers and I've tried this, you should try this, have you tried cutting out this particular food or whatever. And those were the people who actually steered me in the right direction and started my journey on, you know, what I should be doing. And without them, I don't know where I'd be. And so that's why I started my blog. That's why I wanted to be that person, so that, you know, I've seen some of the dreadful advice out there from people saying, if you have rosacea, you should do this. And, you know, I would rather that someone Googled and found my blog and kind of was able to take it, you know, not as gospel, because as I say all the time, you know, I have one kind of rosacea. I, you know, what works for me might not work for you, but I've done a lot of research. I've spoken to a lot of people. I try to, you know, I don't ever talk in kind of, you know, declarations. I don't say you should only use this, you should never use this. I try to say, you know, every single person is different and you will need to learn for yourself. But here are the things, with all the information I have and all the information that's out there on rosacea, here is what could guide you in the right direction. And I just, it scares me how much stuff is out there. Like you on all sorts of skin conditions, some of like the, you know, the DIY skincare people make and stuff like this. It's quite scary. And there are, you know, there's been such a rise in very affordable skincare, which has made lots of people, you know, it's opened up skincare to a whole new kind of person, because they can be like, oh, that's only a couple of pounds, I could try that, and I can try this. But it also creates an issue where people are using products that potentially aren't suitable for them or aren't meant for them, using them in the wrong ways, and that is creating a lot bigger issues. I've spoken to quite a few dermatologists who said, you know, I've seen people who, you know, probably were predisposed to rosacea, but the skincare they're using, the things they're doing, the actives that they are putting on their skin have really exacerbated it and really brought it on and made it a lot more severe than it ever would have been. And, you know, I think we have this issue at the moment that there's so much information out there. Everything's accessible to everybody, which is wonderful, because, you know, you could find the skin positivity community. You could find people who look like you, who have the same experiences as you, who can support you. But then you also have the other side, which is where you're open to information from literally anybody in the world who could be telling you something just to sell you something. And, you know, it's how you have to be so careful. And I think so many people don't have the media savvy side of them to know which is which. Which is tough.
Well, we've just, I mean, right now we're in the middle of, or not the middle of, but we're still in the wake, I would say, of the Gwyneth Paltrow sun protection application video, which to your point is a great example of, and Caroline Hiron said this, and I created an episode about this, is bad information and how much bad information and misinformation there is out there. And how unfortunately, and you alluded to it earlier, it's actually a lot easier to find poor information than it is to find good information, because good information, of most of the time, good information isn't sexy. Most of the time, good information comes off the back of a double-blind clinical trial, and sometimes comes from a really wordy website written by a dermatologist, or, you know, it's quite, you can get bored after the first paragraph. But
hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Gwyneth Paltrow, who you've seen in the Marvel films, obviously we love Pepper Potts, and it's far more accessible. And so you would think, well, she wouldn't steer me wrong. And there is a part of me that thinks, I'm not skeptical enough to think that she's deliberately doing it. I think she's probably been told that that's really good information, because A-list stars are more likely to be surrounded by, well, they're not going to be, you don't see dermatologists, consultant dermatologists hanging around with Hollywood stars, do you really?
No.
They're more like, and also I think their mate who's got a natural skincare brand.
Yeah. And I think there's also that thing of, like, you know, you look at someone like Gwyneth Paltrow and you think, well, she looks great. Like, obviously her skin's fine. And I think there's so much of this as well that comes out with so many things, like celebrities selling like detox teas and skincare ranges and all that kind of stuff. And it's just like, yeah, but what else? What else is there? Because, you know, Gwyneth Paltrow talks about the fact that she only uses however much SPF or whatever, but it's like people look at her and think, oh, she looks great. Her skin looks wonderful. So, you know, obviously it's not damaging her skin. So what's, you know, maybe this is all scaremongering, and maybe I've been told wrong my whole life that, you know, the sun's bad for your skin and all that stuff. So there's that, it's that kind of, I don't know what, there's like a term where it's like when you're in proximity to something, it like kind of gives it a nice warm glow, because it's, you assume that that's exactly the same, and it's so damaging. And I think there's so much of that in celebrity and influencer culture. Lots of people who are getting paid to say a certain thing, or just don't have the information, don't have the education, but are, like you say, it's sexier when somebody's just like, this is the one thing you need that will, you know, because I've you know, however many years worth of blog posts, and the most popular ones are the ones that are like skincare and kind of tangible things that people like, tell me what to buy. What are you using? Your skin looks good. I'm going to go buy that thing. And it's, they want something to have in their hand that they can put on their face, that they feel working, that they can actually see and touch. And they are the popular blog posts that people really, really are engaged with. But it always surprises me, because I've done so many blog posts on, you know, reducing stress, on kind of, you know, positive affirmations, on, you know, the kind of psychological side of rosacea, and how by harnessing those things, you can really reduce your stress, which, in, you know, has a massive knock-on effect for rosacea. But I feel like for some people, that's a little bit too much work, and it takes time, and it's kind of an everyday practice, and it's something that they need to really think about. And it's often uncomfortable as well. You know, I talk about positive affirmations and, you know, meditation and things like that. And you can see people just like backing away slowly, because I think especially for British people, we're very like, sounds a bit woo-woo. She's going to ask me to hold a crystal in a minute. Like, we're very kind of suspicious of those things. Whereas we're just like, nah, just, you know, I'll go spend £20 on a moisturizer and hopefully it'll be fine. And I think that, you know, I tell people that there is no silver bullet solution for rosacea. There is nothing that I've done that I would say this is the biggest thing. Like, everything is, it's multi-pronged. There's so many things that I've changed, so many things that I've, you know, completely overhauled in my life. And it's not a one and done. It's not like I discovered all these things, I changed it, and then now my rosacea is kind of under control. It's every single day I make micro decisions that change how my skin looks and feels. And it's now got to the point, you know, 16 years in, that I don't even realize I'm making them. They're so like immediate and in the back of my head. It's like, I'll walk into a room, I'll clock where, you know, the radiators are, or, you know, where there's a fire in the corner, and I'll be like, we can't sit there, can't sit there, can't sit there. You know, I'll immediately be kind of weighing everything up in my head. And though that's just what I have to do every single day, because it's an ongoing thing, it's a chronic skin condition, you have to constantly be aware of it. And, you know, there's so many people who find that very hard. I found it hard to deal with. At 21, I didn't want to think, you know, a doctor said to me, you should cut down, you should stop drinking, you should never use hair straighteners again, you should get 8 hours sleep every night, you should have a really, really healthy diet. And, you know, to a 21-year-old at university who is already feeling like she stands out, you don't want to be that person. You're like, oh, sorry, it's 10 p.m. It's past my bedtime. I have to go home and eat a salad. Like, it's just not realistic. And so I think a lot of people, they Google rosacea, they see this enormous list of triggers, which is basically everything. And most of them are fun things. And they just think, my life's over. Like, that, there's absolutely no joy left. There's nothing left to do. So they either, you know, do all those things and become miserable, or they just go in denial and are just like, no, I'm going to carry on. If I'm going to have it forever anyway, I might as well just carry on doing the fun things and just deal with the consequences. And so, you know, I was very much there when I was 21. I just carried on. I was just like, it'll be fine, I don't believe you. And it got so much worse. It was awful. And I had to get to that point where my skin was so bad that I couldn't bear to leave the house, and I didn't ever want anyone to see me. And that was the point where I was like, right, okay, this, perhaps cutting down alcohol isn't so bad. Maybe I should try sleeping more every night. And, you know, you have to find that point. And for some people, it's not, I was reading a study earlier that talks about the fact that the link between depression in people with skin conditions and the severity of the skin conditions isn't, you know, a straight line. There are some people who have a very severe skin condition who it doesn't really bother all that much. And there might be some people who, you know, their skin condition might be considered mild, but it has an enormous impact on their life. And there is no way of knowing who you are. You know, that's why I really, you know, bang the drum about people who, you know, if you go to your GP or your dermatologist and you don't feel like they're taking you seriously, you can say something, or you can go see somebody else, because no one knows exactly how you feel about your skin condition except you. And you have to explain to them, you have to say, you know, I don't want to go out, or sometimes I call in sick to work, or I've stopped going on dates, or, you know, all these things. There are so many ways that this can affect your life, and nobody can know that from looking at you. You might think that, you know, I think people would be surprised from looking at me, from seeing the stuff that I talk about online, to know that I still really struggle with my self-esteem, because I get so many messages from people saying, I wish I had your bravery. You know, you post photos of your bare face online, and I tell them that every time I do that, my stomach drops. Like, the moment I'm hitting publish on a photo on Instagram, my stomach is just flipping over and over and over and over and over and over. And it, you know, it's scary. It's still the thing that is my biggest vulnerability, and I'm basically just like displaying it on a platter to the world. And that's not getting less scary the more I do it. If anything, it's getting more scary, because when I first started, I was doing it to 20, 30 followers who all kind of knew me, and now I'm doing it to 30,000 people, and it's infinitely scarier. But it feels very cathartic. Like, I hate it in the moment. It feels terrifying. And then the moment I do it, I just focus on the messages I get from people who find it so freeing to be scrolling through their feed and just have all these photos that they don't see themselves in, and then to see a face that looks like them. And it's it sounds so crazy and it sounds so silly, but I think unless you have been the kind of person who, like you were saying earlier, doesn't see themselves anywhere and takes that to be a silent judgment on them and a silent kind of nod to, yeah, you're a bit weird, aren't you? That's why no one else looks like you. And that's why we don't feature people who look like you in magazines or on TV or in films. And I think the moment that that starts to change, it can be so freeing for people. And just, it's incredibly emotional. The messages I get from people are just phenomenal. I weep all, I'm a big weeper anyway, I cry all the time, but the messages I get from people are just so overwhelming, which is why, yeah, April is Rosacea Awareness Month. And last year I had to take May off because I just, it felt like an emotional hangover.
Wow.
Not just because I was sharing so much of myself every day, but because I would share something of myself and then my inbox would be filled with people being like, oh my God, me too. And telling me, like, you know, the worst time of their life, or like, you know, the fears they have for the future, or the fears they have that if they have kids, will they also have rosacea? And am I passing this on to my daughter? And, you know, all these things that are just, you would never know if you just saw somebody on the street who had a bit of a red face and you just kind of thought, oh God, what's she making such a big deal about? But there's, you know, we all contain multitudes. There's so much always going on than other people know.
100% is that saying, isn't there? Everyone's fighting, or everyone's dealing, I can't even remember the saying now, a battle that you don't know. I've really nailed that one, didn't I? But you're absolutely right, because you've talked about a couple of things on here that just made me think about recently. I've shared on my Instagram about, I wouldn't call it my weight loss, but I've talked about connecting with my body, basically, which, and the one of the consequences of that has been that I've lost weight. And I've started posting different kind of content. And I had a couple of sort of troll messages basically saying, you're still a lump. Why are you putting videos up of you working out? And but the thing is, Lex, is I think I know what I look like. I know I'm not some Instagram fitness person, but that's why I do it. Because it's not about that. It's about feeling strong and confident in yourself, which is exactly what you promote. But I was going through my computer archives and I was looking at all of my old pictures, and we're talking like years back, and there is not a single picture that I could share that would say, this is why I'm happy to present myself now, because this is what my past looked like, because they don't exist. I was untagged. They've been deleted. I have erased my history, even though it really informs my present.
Yeah. And it's sad, isn't it? Because it's there's so much that, you know, back then when I was untagging and refusing to let people take my photo, or always offering to take the photo for everyone else, my only thought was, how does my skin look? How would people judge me if they look back on this? Is it going to make me feel sad when I see this photo tomorrow? And actually, you know, I would look back on these photos now and think, oh my God, yeah, that was the night that we went to that place, or that was whoever's birthday, or that was, you know, that was Freshers Week. That was, you know, all these things that I wish I had photos of.
That was my first and last time drinking Sambuca.
Yeah, exactly. And it's just, you know, all these moments that are now gone. And I hear this from a lot of people who they're not present in their own lives because they're worried, or because they feel so ashamed. There was a woman who got in touch with me who was thinking about not going to her son's wedding because she felt so embarrassed about her skin, and there would be people there that she hadn't seen in kind of 10, 15 years or whatever. And she just could not bear the thought of them seeing her in the way that she was. And she was just like, I don't know what excuse to make, because how do I tell my son that I can't go to his wedding? It's like, and it's such a thing that if you said that to anybody who hadn't, you know, had this kind of experience, they would think she was the most selfish person alive. They would think, you know, get over yourself. This is about your son. This isn't your wedding day. This isn't anything to do with you. Like, no one's looking at you, blah, blah, blah. That's all very rational. And she probably knows all that in some like place in her brain. But it can be so debilitating to have these thoughts in the back of your mind, to think, you know, how stressed you are. And that, you know, the moment I feel stressed, my skin just goes woof. And, you know, if you put yourself in a situation where you are going to be stressed for an entire day, I can't even imagine the effect that would have on my skin. That might result in a flare-up that could last her weeks, if not months. You know, that could cause her physical pain and issues that, you know, no one would understand. They just see this thing of, I don't like the way I look, so I'm not going. You know, that's kind of something that I try to really stress to people every time I do an interview, every time I, you know, talk about my rosacea. It's not just focusing on the way it looks. Obviously, you know, all the stuff I do on Instagram, my blog, it's a very visual medium. So obviously I have to post photos of my skin in a flare up for people to see, because otherwise it doesn't catch people's eye. If I put a photo of me in makeup, but underneath I'm talking about like how rosacea feels, it's not going to reach anybody. So, you know, I do have to share these photos, but at the same time, it's become quite difficult, because at times I feel a little bit like a rosacea bot. Like, when I look down my Instagram feed, you know, I look at my friends' Instagram feeds and it's like, oh, there's a birthday party and there's a holiday and there's like their nephew and there's this, that, that, that. And I look down mine and it's just like my face, my face, my face, my face, my face, my face, my face. And, you know, I have other interests. I try to post about other stuff and it just bombs, because Instagram hates everything else that I put on there apart from my face.
I'm laughing because I absolutely know. Yeah, the algorithm
is painful,
mental.
Isn't it? You put something up and you're like, oh, I really like this photo. It's like, it gets shown to about 1,000 people. And it's just like, okay, fine. But it's, you know, it has kind of reached a point where now I do get messages from people who I think have stopped seeing me as an actual human being. And they just kind of see me as like, it's like I'm a rosacea support, like, chat bot. That they just send me a message being like, moisturizer ? And it's like, hi, how are you?
Yeah.
I'm Lex. Can we have an actual conversation? Like, would you walk up to like an assistant in Boots and just be like, moisturizer? Or would you say, hi, wondering if you can help me?
Oh my God.
But I think that the internet has created this barrier.
Yeah.
And it just makes people think that they can just talk to you and just like, I put in question, get out answer. And like, I'm just there to sit there 24 hours a day being like, hello, rosacea bot here. Here is your answer. Goodbye. Like, it's really demoralizing, because it does make me think that people are just, that they do only see the rosacea, and they do think that that's the only thing that I can talk about or think about. Or,
well, it moves them away as well. It moves them away as well from the point that you're fundamentally and ultimately trying to make, which is your rosacea diagnosis is the beginning of a journey. And it's a very unique journey to you that's going to involve your own interrogation and analysis of your triggers, both lifestyle, the skincare that you use, and assessing everything else. It's basically you're saying, I've paid attention to me. So now I understand type 1 rosacea as it exists within me well enough to be able to talk about it, and the other types, because you've educated yourself. But what you're ultimately trying to say is, and now, my friend, I'm telling you that if you do the same, you can have the same sort of control and understanding that I have, that has been so empowering. But I can't do that discovery for you.
Yeah, absolutely. And I don't know. I do think it's kind of part of this double-edged sword that we were talking about with the internet earlier as well, because I think it has made people a little bit less kind. I think it has made people a little bit more demanding. I'll get a message, and then, you know, a day later I'll get another message saying, hello. It's just like,
I got told off for being abrupt. the other day. At 11 o'clock at night, I replied to someone and said, it's all on the main grid on my latest post. And admittedly, I'm imagining how it would have sounded. It's all on the main grid in the main post, which might have, the person might have read it thinking I was saying, all right, idiot. Yeah. Hello, McFly, which wasn't. It was just, I want to get that information to that person quickly. And I got a proper telling off and an unfollow.
It's so hard, isn't it? And I'm an empath, and I feel all my feelings very, very, very close to the surface. And I hate thinking that I've upset people. And I hate that I can't go back to everybody who sends me messages. And I hate that, you know, people might feel that, you know, I've put myself out there and said, like, if you don't have anyone else to talk to, you can always come talk to me, and like, I'll try and help and stuff. But inevitably I can't help everybody because I have a job. And also I need time off the internet because otherwise I would lose my mind. Mm. But you know, I have like Instagram lets you set up kind of an automatic kind of reply function thing. And if people send me a question about rosacea, I have this kind of copied and pasted thing where it's just like, I'm really sorry that I can't come back to you with a more personalized response, but I just want to check that you've seen this. I have an FAQ post on my blog, which is thousands of words long and literally lists everything I've ever written on rosacea in 15 years. Have a look there. Like, if your question isn't answered there, please feel free to come back with a very specific question. I'll try and help you. But you just would not believe the amount of times people reply being like, I don't have time to read that. Can you just tell me what moisturizer to buy? And it's like, but I don't. And so I took the time to write it. So why can't you take the time to read it? Like, that's not how this works. Like, I'm not getting paid to be here. I'm a person, and I've done the massive amounts of research. I've tried to put everything, you know, I can't tell you a moisturizer because one, I don't know your skin type. Two, I don't know what you've already tried. I don't know where you are in the world. I don't know what your budget is. If I have to ask you all these questions, it turns into a consultation session. And also, I'm not a dermatologist. I don't know, like, I'm not here to give that kind of advice. And so I tried to give you links to the conversations that, you know, all of the information that I have on my blog so that you can follow other links I've put there to studies and like things that other people recommend and, you know, further information so that you can do the reading as well. And so, like you say, you can become more informed so that you can get beyond the point where you're having to come back to me each time you want a new cleanser or a new moisturizer or what are your thoughts on this new makeup, because hopefully by the end you'll have the same amount of information that I do. You'll be just as informed as I am, and that's how we raise everybody's education levels in rosacea. Because, you know, I've never wanted to be a resource. I've never wanted to be the kind of rosacea oracle that people come to and be like, I have to check and see what Lex thinks about this product before I buy it, because it's just not realistic. I can't be that person. I don't think anybody could be that person. So, you know, it's so much about boundaries. And I think like anybody who has their job or any of their life on the internet is, you know, struggles with boundaries. But and I think I kind of have made a bit of a rod for my own back, because obviously I'm putting myself out there and saying, you know, here's my vulnerability. I'm a human, like, you know, I have experienced the same thing that you have. And so, you know, I'm kind of inviting people to kind of open up to me. And that's I do see it as a privilege. I see it as a wonderful thing that people feel like they can talk to me and they can't talk to anybody else. But at the same time, you know, we have to have boundaries. And I do think it's such a hard thing to talk about without sounding like, I'm so busy, guys. Like, I have to switch off now. Or like, you know, people always make fun of people saying, I'm taking a social media break, I'll be back in a week. And it's like, it makes people sound very kind of self-important. But it can be really, really draining. And like I mentioned, you know, I had to take a kind of month off last year just because I felt so tired and so like emotionally tired. I felt really kind of just drained from listening to so many sad conversations and, you know, just hearing these conversations over and over. And I've spoken to other people who kind of do this, like similar things, but with other skin conditions. And it's hard because you want to be that support and you want to be that person, but it's difficult to, unless you literally like live your life on Instagram, you can't, you can't be there all the time. And I set up a private Facebook group called Rosacea Club, where people can go. And I kind of set that up so that other people could form that community for me, because I started to see these communities building underneath my posts. So, you know, I'd post something, someone would ask a question, and, you know, for whatever reason, you know, if a post gets too many comments, it's just, or it's, you know, a week after I've posted it, it's better for me to just cut and run. I can't go back to post and keep keeping up with questions, because it would just take all day. But I see other people jumping in and saying, oh, actually, I think I've seen her talk about this before. She's got a post about it on her blog Or they'll say, I'm not Lex, but I also have rosacea type 1, and this is what I found really useful. And so, you know, this community started building within my page, which is kind of the dream, really, because that takes me out of the spotlight. It takes me out of this, you know, that oracle type figure that I do not want to be. And it actually just puts me forward as saying, right, I was here at the beginning. I started this account before, like, you know, people started doing this kind of thing, talking about rosacea. And so people, this is now a great platform for other people to discover other people and to have these conversations. And so I started that Facebook group as an extension of that, so that people can post their questions. I'm just there to like manage and make sure people aren't, you know, selling dodgy LED face masks and all that rubbish. But I'm just there as a kind of moderator. But for the majority of the time, you know, everyone is just asking questions to each other, and it's very much a kind of a little community in itself, which is wonderful. That's kind of what I always wanted, that I built the thing that I didn't have, which I think is so common with creators and like influencers online and stuff. You become the thing that you needed.
Yeah.
I wish that I had a blog that sounds really conceited, but I wish that there was a blog like mine out there when I was first diagnosed, because I had no idea what I was looking for, where to even start. So, you know, that I hope that that's what my blog and my social media and that Facebook group can do for people.
I totally know what you mean about it being draining as well. It's a little bit, I've sort of said this before about being so open about depression on this podcast, is that I will do everything I can to send the ladder down, but I can't. Mm-hmm. I can't go to the bottom of the ladder again. Yeah. And help anyone like up the rungs, because that's too much. I worry about. Yeah. So I totally understand about you put the blog posts out there, thousands of words, frequently asked questions, which I bet you update all the time.
Yeah.
And finesse all the time. And that's you sending the ladder down.
Absolutely.
You can't sort of, you can't say, well, I'll come online at 8 PM and read it out to you, so that you know. Because you've already put in the work. I do completely understand. So as we draw to the end of our time together, I have two questions for you. One is what you would like anyone listening to this, whether they have rosacea or not, what you would like them fundamentally, if there's one thing you would like them to come away from this episode understanding about rosacea or knowing about rosacea that you think that they may not already know, what would you like that thing to be?
That's a good question. I think that it's so much more than your skin. I think that's something that I wish everybody knew. And even I think people with rosacea, I think they need to constantly remind themselves of that, because I think we can get so bogged down in, you know, here are my symptoms, here's the way that I treat things. Like with everything in life, I think it's just like, here is the problem, here is a solution. And then if that doesn't work, it's just kind of like, what now? What do I do now? That's the only thing I was told would work. And I think, you know, it's what we've been coming back to over and over throughout this episode, which is that you need to find what works for you. And the only way you can do that is by knowing yourself and truly understanding what your skin is telling you, what your body is telling you, what your mind is telling you. And I think that goes for so many things outside of rosacea as well, that it's a whole body thing that you need to take notice of. Mm. And if you're you can be using, you know, the best skincare in the world, you can have a dietitian, you can do literally everything. If your brain is still not in the right kind of space, it's never going to fully click. And you're always going to be kept in that cycle, because emotional stress is my biggest trigger by far. I could be, you know, I could be living like a monk. I could be doing everything right. But the moment I'm stressed, you know, if I, back in the day when the world was open, you know, if you miss a tube, or if you're like, you realize that you've gone to the wrong location for a meeting, or, you know, your train breaks down on the way to the airport or something like that. And that feeling that, you know, when you get like that feeling in the pit of your stomach, and you, like a normal, bunny rabbit ears, normal person's skin will kind of flush when they get angry or like worried or anything like that. That's just, that's such a powerful mind-body connection that we all understand. But it seems so difficult to explain to people how the opposite can also be true. So it doesn't just have to be negative emotions that affect your skin. If you're, if you being embarrassed or angry can make your skin red, surely you learning to take control of your stress and reducing those emotions can also have the opposite impact on your skin. And like, this is the stuff that I talk about when people are like, oh, it's a bit too woo-woo for me. No, you've lost me. But it surprises me that people don't see that link. So I think understanding that by just treating the body, you will never get the results that you want. You're only treating half of the issue. I think you really need to be looking at things from a completely kind of holistic point of view.
Well, my final question was going to be, and what would you like somebody with rosacea to know? But I feel like you just answered that.
Just tied it up in a bow there.
It's as if you've done this before, Lex. But that's perfect.
It's as if this is all I think about.
Well, that's perfect. And I think it is really helpful. And I do think you're absolutely right. And one of the things I was so delighted to talk to you anyway, but I was so glad that I knew that we were going to cover, is how it affects how you present yourself to the world, and how it makes you feel when you leave your front door. And I've spoken on this podcast before about, I would call in fat, like I didn't go to hairdresser appointments, and I would be like, I'm locked in my flat, my flatmates locked me in the flat by accident, didn't have a flatmate because I just didn't like how I looked in my clothes, and I thought, I don't want this celebrity hairdresser to see me and judge me, so I'll just stay home and my split ends, and I will, I don't know, cry into a curry. I don't know. So I'm really glad that you've so brilliantly exposed it for what it is, which is, yes, it is a skin condition, an inflammatory skin condition, but it is also so much more than that. And as you say, just because if you have it mildly, it might affect you profoundly in your self-esteem, and you might have it really severely, and you might not be as affected, but you're still affected.
Yeah, absolutely. I think just, you know, that is the drum that I want to keep banging, that it's, if it is affecting you, if it's something that's affecting your day-to-day life, if it's affecting the way you feel about yourself, if it's making you change plans, like you say, that is enough for you to go and talk to somebody. Like, you know, there's been such a huge drive recently, in like recent years, about mental health and about, you know, talk to somebody, talk to a friend, talk to a GP, just talk, like you need to reach out. And I think that, you know, we're still so kind of deep in that quagmire of, no one wants to hear about my problems, or, you know, mustn't grumble, people have got it worse. And it's just, I really hate that. Like one of the rules in my Facebook group is that you're not allowed to diminish other people's feelings, because I've seen in other groups, and people have done it to me as well online, you know, people say, oh, your rosacea's not even that bad. Like mine's so much worse. And it's just like, this isn't a competition. And secondly, it doesn't matter what you think about my rosacea or how bad you think it is. It's about how it makes me feel. And I think that it's, you know, this mental health conversation is so kind of tied up in this conversation as well, because it's impossible to separate the two. I cannot understand how anybody can even discuss a skin condition and not, you know, ask about your mental health, because they're so entwined. You know, for years when I was going to my GPs, it was never even mentioned. No one even asked me, no one cared. You know, I was a 21-year-old girl sat sobbing in a doctor's office, and they were just like, there you go, there's cream, bye. They didn't even ask me how I felt about it, or, you know, what I wanted to do, or how it was affecting me day to day. And it took many years to find a doctor who actually was the first one that said, you know, are you okay? How do you, like, you know, are you finding it hard to socialize? Are you finding it hard to go out without makeup? And, you know, it felt, you know, the moment that doctor asked me that, I could not stop crying, because I just suddenly thought, you know, it's not just me. It's not just me being overdramatic. It's not me, you know, being silly. This is a real thing that an actual doctor is asking me, you know, what is the impact on your mental health? And they can't be separated. They are one and the same.
That's good advice. So, I mean, would you say, if someone's listening to this and they are affected, that as much as you have to take control of understanding your triggers of skincare and all of the things that we've discussed, would you also advise that they talk it out with a mental health professional? And are there specific mental health professionals or resources that you would recommend?
I would definitely say that people, if they feel like they, if they are in the right place to do so, I think that is really, really useful, because I do think some people aren't ready yet. I think, you know, being diagnosed with any kind of chronic condition, I think there's so many like hurdles to jump over and so many different kind of areas of understanding you need to reach and kind of acceptance. But I think definitely being able to talk to somebody about that is so useful, because it can be hard. You know, I've spoken to my family and my husband about it and friends and things, but I think there's something missing. I just feel like they cannot fully understand how it feels, no matter how many times, you know, I've explained to my husband, you know, that I think about it all the time. It's constantly there in the back of my head. I still don't think he understands. I think he kind of thinks that's like something people say, but I don't think he really kind of recognizes how tiring that can be and how much it kind of impacts everything I do. And it's, you know, you can't expect people to. It's such a hard thing. It's like him trying to explain his depression to me. It's you know, it's not something I can empathize. I can try and understand, we can talk about it, I can try and listen to what he's saying, but I'll never really fully know how it feels. So I think, you know, I would recommend going and talking to somebody. Definitely mention it to your GP as part of your diagnosis, because like I say, it should always be, you know, one and the same. It shouldn't be, I'm here to talk to you about my rosacea and also depression or anxiety. Mm-hmm. It's, you know, they're not two separate, completely different things. They're very much linked. There are people who are, you know, specifically, you know, there are psychodermatologists who, you know, this is absolutely their key kind of focus. It's still, you know, I think a fairly new kind of section, so it's probably hard to get referred, you know, within the NHS system. And, you know, the barrier for a lot of people is money, which is sad. So many people come to me and say, you know, I can't afford to go to a dermatologist and my GP won't refer me because my rosacea is not bad enough. So, you know, that's another thing that people have to take into consideration as well. So, you know, I totally recognize that I'm saying, you know, it would be great for you to be able to go and talk to someone, but I also recognize that that's not a thing that's available to everybody. But I think just being able to talk about it and vocalize those feelings can often really help you anyway, which is why I really encourage people to, you know, come and find the different people in the rosacea community or the skin positivity community in general, because those conversations, even just being around them, even just hearing them, it normalizes it so much, so that maybe the next time your husband or your mum or your sister or whatever asks you how you're feeling, you find the words a bit better because you hear these conversations. And, you know, it's like we said earlier, you can't be what you can't see. And it's in the same way that mental health conversations about anxiety and depression and things like that have come on in the past couple of years. People see those conversations and they find the words to be able to phrase what they've been feeling. And I think that's a lot of what I felt through following lots of people who also have rosacea and different kind of visible skin differences, I think just hearing the way they describe stuff, I'm like, oh, that's perfect. That's exactly it. Never would have thought about it like that before. Or wait, so you're saying that not everyone feels like that. You're telling me that's a weird thing to think. And you suddenly realize that's kind of, you know, and you take it and you think, right, okay, next time I go to my GP, they're the words I can use. That's exactly the way that I can represent it in the best way possible.
Well, I'm so glad we've had this conversation. I know that I'm positive that you will have given people listening the words to use to speak to a GP, a dermatologist, or somebody so that they can get on that path that you have obviously been on yourself. And it's just been brilliant. Thank you so much. And obviously I'll put the link in the show notes.
Thank you for having me.
Anytime. I'll put the link in the show notes to your website, to your social media, and to anything else that you would like me to share. But Lex, thanks so much for coming on and just being so brilliantly thorough and honest and real about rosacea and educating me. Like I said, I know about rosacea, but I didn't really understand it. And I feel like I've come away with such a keen understanding of how to talk about it. So thank you.
You're welcome. Thank you so much for having me. It's been so much fun. I could honestly talk about this stuff all day. This is like joyful for me.
Thank you so much for listening. I hope you found that conversation with Lex and me useful. If you would like to get in touch with me, don't hesitate. It's the beauty podcast, nearly forgot then. It's thebeautypodcast@gmail.com. Or if you feel more inclined to send a more informal message, you can always DM me on Instagram and Twitter, where I am at Emma Guns. If you would like to speak to me and thousands of other listeners of this podcast, we are all in the Facebook forum, which you can join by clicking the link in the show notes. The show notes can be found wherever it is that you are streaming and downloading this episode, and we would love to see you there. Thank you so much for listening. I will see you on the next one.